We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people, you're beginning to believe the illusions we're spinning here. You're beginning to think that the tube is reality and that your own lives are unreal. In God's name, you people are the real thing. We are the illusion. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of the sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off!
Brainwashed in our childhood, brainwashed by the school, brainwashed by our teachers, and brainwashed by all the rules. Brainwashed by our leaders, by our kings and queens, brainwashed in the open and brainwashed behind the scenes.
God, God, God!
Your existence, knowledge, please.
This is the Richard Serrett Show on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
We'll talk about the myth of overpopulation at 11:30. Right now, we continue to speak with Dr. Judy Wood, mechanical engineer with research interests in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, and optical methods. We're talking about the possibility that directed energy weapons brought down the Twin Towers on 9/11. Interesting quote here that sent to me by a listener. It's incredibly apropos, so I'll share it with you now. This death beam, Dr. Tesla said, will operate silently but effectively at distances as far as a telescope could see an object on the ground and as far as the curvature of the Earth would permit it. It will be invisible and will leave no marks behind it beyond its evidence of destruction. An army of 1 million dead, annihilated in an instant, he said, would never reveal or could not reveal even under the most powerful microscope just what catastrophe had caused. Catastrophe had caused its destruction. Thank you to Amy for sending that in. Dr. Judy Wood, we're talking about a Tesla-type death beam, in your estimation?
Well, I don't know about a death beam, but it's, yeah, an energy field of some sort, and about supersizing it.
Yes, Tesla coils. We've seen the Tesla coils, for those that have looked at pictures of John Hutchinson's former lab in British Columbia. He had Tesla coils. So we're talking about very large Tesla coils.
Well, if you look at a big Tesla coil, it's got this donut-shaped thing on the top and then a column with wires wrapped around it going up to it. It looks very much like the structure of a hurricane.
Hmm. Yes.
Did you know that there was a very large hurricane right outside of New York City on 9/11?
I had not heard that.
It was billed to be even bigger than Katrina and was aimed right for New York City. For 4 days, it was going northwest, past Bermuda, headed straight to New York City, stopped right outside of New York City on the morning of 9/11, made a U-turn, headed out of town that afternoon.
All right. That's interesting. I mean, hurricanes obviously normally don't come anywhere near that vicinity.
And for no one to have been told. I've got snapshots from the morning news. They don't show, it shows that area of the ocean, but doesn't show this big, you know, pinwheel that should be out there.
I missed that report. Where did that come, where did you get that report, that there was a hurricane headed for New York on the morning of 9/11?
I was looking at the plume and the nature of the plume, and decided I wanted some, you know, better pictures from up above, and went looking for weather satellite images. And oh my gosh, what is this thing?
How far offshore?
Well, the outer bands were at the end of Long Island and on Cape Cod.
And this was, you're saying, have you had a meteorologist look at it to determine at what were we talking about? Category 5, 4?
It was a 3 the day before.
Hmm.
And it was it'd been downgraded, but it spread out like a figure skater puts their arms out and they slow down.
Okay.
And it spread out to, you know, 500 plus miles in diameter.
Is that the fingerprint? Is that the fingerprint of the energy weapon?
I believe it's part of it. Did you know there was thunder reported at JFK Airport, Newark Airport, and LaGuardia Airport? All sides of Manhattan.
Thunder?
Thunder.
And it was, I'm guessing, if I think back to that day, it was a pretty clear day.
Right. It was dry thunder.
And those reports come from?
The National Weather Service.
They reported thunder.
Yes. Those are the airport reports.
Okay.
Those individual airports.
All right. So you add these things up. I mean, a hurricane 500 miles offshore from New York.
No, 500 miles in diameter.
Oh, 500 miles in diameter. I'm sorry.
Well, it is about 500 miles offshore for the eye of it, but it's, you know, the outer bands. But the field effects reach outside of the outer bands.
Okay.
Like, we can sense a storm coming, you know, especially people with arthritis. They feel it in
their
joints.
Sure, sure.
They sense the field effects. So the fact that there's thunder in the vicinity, you know, all around Manhattan, that was enough to say that there's field effects there.
My word. Now, would the hurricane that was offshore, would that be as a result of the activation of this directed energy weapon, or?
I believe it was part of it. It's the big Tesla coil.
Does that mean that it was coming from that direction?
I believe that the hurricane, however it was there, and I believe it was manufactured, that it was creating part of the field.
The hurricane was creating part of the field?
Yes. The field effects from the hurricane are part of the field.
So then how, but I mean, a hurricane is a huge storm. I mean, how would that be directed on three buildings within the World Trade Center complex?
Like when John Hutchison does his work, he interferes different types of energy fields.
Okay.
And if you have exquisite control, you know, you have several different energy fields interfering, and then you can get a trigger beam that will set it off in a particular place.
A trigger beam, okay.
Yes, yeah, trigger beam that, you know, the field effects are in the area, and then they just need one last little component, and then, boom, there goes something. Or I believe
almost
the
like
buildings
taking,
were disintegrated but over time.
Like taking a magnifying glass and focusing the sun's rays on a particular location?
Or adding the catalyst. Think of adding the catalyst to a field that's already there.
Okay. And again...
let's say you have a potential between two plates. You know, it's ready to arc, and you just add just one little something in between, and boom, there goes the arc.
This, again, not theoretical. This you've seen it at a smaller scale in Hutchison's lab, but is it possible that someone would have this technology on such a large scale? Is it technically possible?
Well, if this thing was designed, however the hurricane got there, and the fact that weren't told about this hurricane, which had the potential of large storm surges. And if it goes right outside New York City and parks there, Manhattan is, 20 feet above the water?
Yes, yes.
It's going to get flooded out. So aren't you going to tell people they need to evacuate in case the hurricane comes ashore?
Right, right.
So that, to me, confirms that there's some kind of weather control to be so confident that you don't need to alert people.
Have you talked to Scott Stevens about this? Do you know Scott Stevens?
No, I know of him.
Yeah, Weather Wars Info. I mean, he's talking about just exactly this, using, I guess, scalar technology. Is that the appropriate term here, scalar?
It could be. I'm not that familiar with exactly how they make these hurricanes, but
okay.
they're too organized, and I think there's something about the eye, it's a pentagon shape.
Well, that's exactly, yes. He talks about the geometric patterns within these storms. I mean, he basically delivered his last weathercast in Pocatello, Idaho, back in 2005. Once he woke up, he says what was going on, what kind of technology they had. And now he just sees, again, the telltale signs of manufactured weather everywhere. I mean, not just the big things. He says they're not just doing the big things. They're doing everything.
You had to check my website, the Aaron series. It's Hurricane Aaron is the name of it, E-R-I-N.
All right. Hurricane Aaron.
Yeah, it was. It goes there just like it went up to a chalk line, stops, makes a U-turn, and heads back out of town.
DrJudyWood.com. All right. One final time out, come back, and I'll talk a little bit more about this. This is absolutely mind-blowing. Directed energy weapons. Did they bring down the Twin Towers? Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show, News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Sure, go ahead. Believe everything you see on television, everything you read in the newspaper. Go ahead. Get your history out of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Yeah, that's right. Oswald killed Kennedy. Yeah, sure he did. Man, you are living in Disneyland.
Richard Serrett Show continues on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
When Carlos Allende was crossing the Atlantic on his way to Algiers in October of 1943, he claims he and at least 1,000 men witnessed the USS Eldridge become invisible to the human eye, not to radar, to the human eye. That was the source of the legend of the Philadelphia experiment, also known as Project Rainbow. Now think of it, if they could do that in 1943, and we're not talking about the rumors of teleportation, let's assume that didn't happen, but if it simply became invisible to the human eye, if they could do that in 1943, my word, what kind of technology do they have 65 years later? It would be mind-boggling. I don't think our imagination could even fathom what the powers that be have. Do they have a directed energy weapon utilizing giant Tesla coils to create hurricanes and also make the Twin Towers disappear? Dr. Judy Wood says so. Let's grab a quick call before we say goodnight to Judy, and that is Jim in Etobicoke. Welcome to News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Hi, Richard. Have you guessed? You another phenomenal show.
Thank you.
Richard, I'm just curious as to, I'm not sure if your guest is aware, you had your guest off last week, last Thursday, I forget the gentleman's name, was talking about 9/11 and the fact that the towers were shut down by the Marvin Bush security firm on the 8th and the 9th. And there's two questions I have, really. Is one, do you think this igniter, I guess, could be potentially set up in those 2 days when the buildings were shut down and completely under control, with no access by anybody else? And also, if so, what was the size or the category size of this hurricane that was offshore of New York? I'll take the call or answer offline.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Judy?
I think the hurricane was a Category 3, but it had been downgraded that morning because it slowed down, but it was bigger. So the overall energy was, you know, larger, but it's a larger area. But one other thing I'd like to mention is there's an abrupt shift in the Earth's magnetic field with each of the events on 9/11. Like it's a buildup, a change in the magnetometer readings, and then an abrupt change of direction of those curves.
Okay.
So that's kind of interesting, too.
That's probably worthy of another half an hour, which we don't have. I want to give you a little bit of time to talk about on drjudywood.com. Sort of a clarion call for people interested in launching another 9/11 investigation. I know there are those up here in Canada that would like to see that, but what are you trying to do down in the States?
Well, I am conducting an investigation, and I'm taking legal action as well. And
you're taking NIST to court?
Yes. Well, the contractors for NIST.
Okay.
Who helped in the cover-up of this horrendous crime. And some of these contractors are manufacturers of directed energy weapons.
And how do you know that?
It's on their website.
Ah.
They're test facilities, they're, warehouse.
How can people help you?
Write to me and ask. Let it be known that what's going on.
All right, but in terms of your legal case, I mean, then this is costing money, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Who's helping you with that?
Nobody so far. Well, a couple of people have on a small scale, but yeah, anything would be very helpful there.
All right. So again, it's Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com.
And at the top of the webpage, there's I think it says legal, about the legal case.
Yes.
And if you go to that page, there's a data entry thing that you can, send me an email that way, or, contact me.
All right, and when is that case supposed to happen?
Well, it's ongoing. Okay. There's different activities happening in it right now.
All right. Listen, I know that you'll probably be in the midst of it later next month, which is why we had you on tonight. Thank you for your time. I'm hoping that we can talk again before Christmas and get some details of how this case is going. And I wish you the best of luck. You're a brave woman, and this information is absolutely mind-blowing and not easily dismissed.
Thanks.
Dr. Judy Wood. All right. When we come back, the myth of overpopulation, when the Richard Serrett Show continues here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Believe those who are seeking the truth. Doubt those who find it. The Richard Serrett Show on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
I have never subscribed to the notion that the world is overpopulated. And unfortunately, I think that the philosophy that the world is overpopulated and needs to be controlled has, perhaps unintentionally, in some quarters, led to what I see as a culture of death. My next guest has been described as one of the most gifted historians of his generation. He is an associate professor of history at Columbia University, and his new book is called Fatal Misconception, The Struggle to Control World Population. Matthew Connolly, welcome to the Richard Serrett Show and News Talk 1010.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
6 billion plus, what is it? It's almost 6.5 billion, I guess.
Even more, actually.
It is more than 6.5. Now, I've been told, or I read, that you could house 6.5 or 6 billion plus souls on the main island of Japan. Mind you, we would be sort of living in rather cramped quarters, and there'd be no parking included. But you could do that. You could also stand every man, woman, and child sort of shoulder to shoulder within the greater confines of the city of Orlando, and it is a huge city in Florida. Do you think that the world can sustain 6 billion plus souls?
Well, it really depends on what kind of lives they want to live. I've talked to farmers, people living in rural areas where the next neighbor is more than 10 miles away, and they'll tell you that there are just too many people, you know, and that their lives have changed for the worse because there's just too many crowding the roads. On the other hand, you know, people like me living in a city, in this case in New York, we like to have people around us. We like to be able to walk the streets, you know, and run into our friends. And when we go out at night, we like to have a lively nightlife to entertain us. So, you know, if you want to talk about what is the optimum population, you're probably going to get more than 6.5 billion answers.
That's true. I guess I'm talking in terms of whether or not, and maybe this isn't within your purview, but whether the biosphere can sustain, whether the natural resources.
Well, if it's 6.5 billion plus who are leading the kind of lives that a lot of us would like to lead, that is driving. Not just one car, but several, driving big SUVs, having not just, you know, a 5,000 square foot home, but having a vacation home as well, then sure, it's impossible. It really is. And obviously, human activity is already changing the earth. But what a lot of people, when they think about population, they think about other people. In many cases, they think about people in poor countries, and they think that these countries, they can't possibly sustain this kind of population growth. And they don't think about themselves. They don't think about who's actually using the resources, who's actually creating those greenhouse gases that really is having a global impact.
Well, yeah, we certainly can't deny that the Earth has some serious environmental problems. I would agree with that. But, I believe that there – I subscribe to the theory that there are no limits to growth, when the predictions were that we were going to run out of coal eventually, people thought, well, that's it. You know, it was almost identical to the peak oil theory that we have today, that that's the end of it. But we moved on to something else, and then, you know, one day there may be a hydrogen economy, or we'll be making biofuel from algae. Given the current circumstances, yes, we can't sustain the levels of growth we have based on an economy that's based on a barrel of oil. But if we moved on to greener technologies, who knows? I mean, and if we want to explore the heavens, we'll need more and more people to populate other planets. So that
that's right, Richard. I mean, I too am an optimist. You know, 200 years ago, a very gloomy parson named Thomas Malthus predicted that it was inevitable that whenever you had population growth, that some people are going to have to starve. You know, Malthus is someone who's still read today. Almost everybody who works in the field will talk about Malthus. And you even have, even now, you know, Malthusians who continue to believe that even if he's been wrong for 200 years, sure, one day he's going to be right. Well, he has been wrong for more than 200 years, and hopefully he'll never be proven right. I mean, not as long as people are allowed, you know, to use their ingenuity to come up with solutions for their problems. But alas, you know, all too many times, people who were convinced by Malthus have decided that they knew other people's interests better than they knew it themselves, have tried to impose solutions on other people in other countries, trying to control their numbers, thinking that there was no other solution to problems with scarcity.
Matthew Connolly is my guest, the author of Fatal Misconception, The Struggle to Control World Population. You talk about how these people are generally well-intended that want to control the world population. I recall President Bush, number 41, the current occupant of the White House's father, standing up in, I believe it was the House of Representatives, and talking about, or perhaps it was when he was in the CIA, but I remember him talking about the population in Africa spiraling out of control and how that represented the greatest threat to the U.S.'s national security. I am not convinced, Matthew, that many of the people that are in charge of the world population control agenda are well-intended.
Yeah, you know, the history that I've written is one in which you do find well-intended people. I mean, you do actually find people in leadership positions who think that providing contraception and safe and legal access to abortion is just a way to give people choices, give them control of their lives. But alas, you know, too often, the people who've seized control of a movement, not about family planning, not about reproductive rights, but a movement they felt should be dedicated to controlling the population of the world. These people really were worried about other people. They were worried that there were too many people in poor countries, and that if they continue to grow at the same rate, then one day they would try to take what we have, to come here, you know, to North America, to Europe, to take over. And it's kind of a, you know, when you think of it, a ridiculous fantasy, but it's one that's actually been very powerful, politically powerful. And you can see it even now in the way people respond viscerally, emotionally to immigration, say.
Well, I would argue that in we've got to take a time out here, but in the same way that one of the unintended consequences of Darwin's theory of evolution was the rise of Nazi Germany, that the unintended consequence of some of these groups like Planned Parenthood, et cetera, I mean, and we could get into the background of Margaret Sanger, the den mother of that organization. I mean, this woman was just despicably evil, I believe. But the unintended consequence is to create this a culture of death that we have. And while these people may have been well-intended, perhaps, you know, I might use the term useful fool, but dangerous nonetheless. Would you not agree with that?
Dangerous, yes. I agree with that. In fact, not just dangerous, but destructive. I mean, millions of people paid for their follies.
All right, we've got to take a time out. Matthew Connolly is with us. Fatal Misconception, The Struggle to Control World Population. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
We are apt to shut our eyes against the painful truth. But for my part, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it.
Shining a light backstage in the global theater, exposing evil and corruption in high places. It's the Richard Serrett Show on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Matthew Connolly is with us, described as one of the most gifted historians of our generation, professor at Columbia University, the author of Fatal Misconception, The Struggle to Control World Population. His website is matthewconnolly.net. And that's Connolly, C-O-N-N-E-L-L-Y, MatthewConnolly.net. The youngest of eight children, so you approach this topic with a unique perspective. But that certainly, you know, wasn't why you got interested in this. But I did find it very interesting, the analogy you make. We're talking about how those who look at the human race producing itself, reproducing itself, and sees what a gardener sees when looking at a prized plant, something to be encouraged to bloom in some places and pruned in others, and the pruning primarily, obviously, in the developing world. Safe to say a racist and arrogant agenda here to some extent. Wouldn't you agree, Matthew?
Yeah, that's right, Richard. You know, the cover of my book shows a dandelion, you know, which to some people is a flowering plant, to others it's a pernicious weed.
And one of the more famous or infamous things that Margaret Sanger, who for a long time was the leader of this movement, one of the things that she said was that it was time that we cultivate our garden, that we had to pull up the weeds, you know, that clogged the drains, that we had to, you know, in effect, make people better by breeding them. And that's the fatal misconception. I mean, literally so. A lot of people died because of the idea that some people had, people with power, people with money, that you can make people better by breeding them.
And did she not recruit deliberately other black black recruiters to convince other blacks to be sterilized and to have abortions?
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I mean, I look at Sanger as a tragic figure. You know, she didn't start out that way. She didn't begin, you know, by saying that we had to start paying millions of people to be sterilized, even if that's how she turned out in the end. I mean, she was somebody who initially, anyway, came to this issue because she was a nurse. You know, she worked Lower East Side of Manhattan when that was a working class area. And she could see that that women were suffering and even dying in some cases because of the indifference of the public authorities, the fact that, that birth control was illegal at the time. But over the course of a long career, she ended up making alliances with wealthier people, with the heads of foundations, leaders of international non-governmental organizations, because she thought that ideals were not enough, that she needed power, and she had to have access to power. And that meant compromising that original vision. And eventually that meant for many people that rather than family planning being a means for parents to make choices about their family, instead family planning became a means of planning other people's families.
Mm. Matthew Connelly is with us, the author of Fatal Misconception, The Struggle to Control World Population. I sort of cheated things. The last segment went a little long, so we've got to pay the piper now. We'll break, take a time out, come back. A few more questions before we hit the news at the top of the hour, talking the myth of overpopulation. Get on board. Questions and comments. Do you think that the Earth can sustain 6 billion plus souls? Do you think we need to take measures to control world population? 416-872-1010, Star Talk, Star 8255, toll free from out of town, 1-800-561-CFRB. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
The Richard Serrett Show continues on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Matthew Connelly is here talking about the myth of overpopulation and how overpopulation, or this myth, has been used, well, for nefarious means in some instances, and why the misconception that the world's big problems, poverty, war, pollution, are caused by too many people on the planet. Not true, he says. Well, we've got a few minutes before the top of the hour, three. The argument, run us through the argument there is hunger in the world because there are too many people for the available food supply. True or false?
Well, that was Paul Ehrlich's idea back in 1968, 40 years ago. He wrote a book called The Population Bomb, which is still the all-time bestseller in the field. And he predicted that hundreds of millions of people were going to die from hunger in the 1970s and that it was too late to do anything to stop it. And in fact, Ehrlich called for cutting off food aid for countries that were going hungry. And
so he was a Malthusian.
That's right. He was the Malthusian of our times. And he's alive and kicking. He just came out with a book recently, and I did an interview with him, and he continues to insist not only that he was right to write that book and call for compulsory sterilization for paying parents to be sterilized, but that he was right in saying that hundreds of millions of people did die in the 70s. The fact is that the amount of food per person has been going up year by year for almost 40 years. In fact, if you divided up the food in the world per person, each one of us would have more than 4 pounds a day. And we're not just talking about, bread and rice and whatnot. That includes, meat and fish and dairy and cheese and all the rest of it. It's enough to make us fat. And that's why we throw so much of it out. Americans, it's estimated they throw out about a quarter of the food that's purchased. The British, apparently, it's even more. About a third of the food in Britain ends up in the bin. If you look at the amount of food that we purchase, even if we don't get to consume it all, Americans, anyway, are throwing out more chicken than is eaten in the entire country of India.
So, in other words, hunger is a political, philosophical, societal condition. It is not a product of overpopulation. I read once a figure from the United Nations, no less, saying that the world now produces a quantity of grain that, if distributed evenly, would provide everyone with 3,500 calories per day. That's more than enough for an optimal diet. And that, as you say, that doesn't include vegetables and fruits and fish and meat and poultry and edible oils and nuts, etc.
Yeah, and it's all about politics, and it has very little to do with demography.
All right, we've got to take a time out for news. Excuse me, Matthew. The other side, we'll talk about some of the other misconceptions, whether overpopulation is responsible for poverty and pollution, etc. Matthew Connolly is the author of Fatal Misconception, The Struggle to Control World Population. Stay with us. Back with more of The Richard Serrett Show after the news here on News Talk 1010 CFRB.